We are not losing this war, and Putin is not winning.
Well, that certainly comes as a surprise to a lot of people that are watching the Russia-Ukraine war. And as it turns out, President Trump is now admitting that who knew that solving a war that had been going on really since 2014 would be really hard. And so now it seems he's come to the conclusion that, you know what, instead of worrying about that, let's just call it quits just where it is. Everybody just pick up your tools and your guns and your bullets and just go home and we'll just call it a day. That seems to be the current Trump plan for peace. We're going to see how that actually lands on the people who are involved with this, not the least of which is the Russians and even the Europeans. And to try to make some sense out of this rapidly changing and chaotic situation, we have back with us again today, Andre Martiano, veteran author, Russian military expert, author at his YouTube channel, Smoothie X12, and author of a bunch of books that are really good. Andre, as always, welcome back to the show.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Well, listen, this seems to be one of the better times, given the comments that have been made over the weekend and even over from the meeting at the phone call. First of all, we'll back up a little bit between Trump and Putin, and then the meeting in the White House between Trump and Zelensky, the weird non-press conference that happened afterwards, and then the one that did on the outside of the fence at the White House. I mean, you just hardly can even make this stuff up. And then actually just kind of set the stage here. After all that, last night aboard Air Force One, President Trump was asked where he's at now.
President Zelensky, during that meeting, did you tell him he needed to cede all of the Donbass region to Russia?
No, we never discussed it. We think that what they should do is just stop at the lines where they are, the battle lines. You have a battle line right now. The rest is very tough to negotiate. If you're going to say, you take this, we take that, you know, there's so many different permutations. So what I say is they should stop right now at the battle lines. Go home, stop killing people, and be done.
What do you think should happen with the Donbass region then?
Let it be cut the way it is. It's cut up right now. I think 78% of the land is already taken by Russia. You leave it the way it is right now. They can negotiate something later on down the line.
So much to unpack here, but let's just start with to me, my ears hear that Trump is going, you know what? I'm just tired of messing with this. Y'all figure it out. What do you hear?
No, pretty much the same thing. And he used finally some really intellectual term, which is surprising for me with his vernacular, his permutations, which actually applicable here. The problem, of course, nobody is going to be giving up anything on Russian side, because as Vladimir Putin explained to him many times, and it was conveyed by Russian side, those four oblast regions are not negotiable. They are joined Russia in constitutional way. It is prescribed, enshrined in constitution. And so they're going to be liberated one way or another. So it's no goal. Another matter that obviously Russia is now deep into Kharkov, Dnipropetrovsk, and Sumy Oblast. And so Russians stand there waiting for what's going to transpire on the political level. And if need be, they will continue to move, for example, towards the city of Sumy. They are about 15 kilometers away from it. And deeper into Dnipropetrovsk and Kharkov areas. And in Dnipropetrovsk, I believe the depth of penetration is now up to 20 kilometers inside Dnipropetrovsk area. It's just going the same way as it was going for the last several months. It's just steamroller, just going to the west and
One of the reasons why you have such a unique perspective is you obviously know the Russian side quite well, but living in the United States, you also have a pretty good appreciation of that side. One of the things that really stands out to me is peculiar, I'll politely say, I suppose, is that Trump spoke on the phone with Putin for, it said, the eighth time, a 2.5-hour phone call. I think it was on Wednesday. And that, by all accounts, was the longest call that they had. And I can't imagine anything short of Putin laying out in great detail exactly what they would and would not do. And then for Trump to make this comment here just last night that, well, I know they got most of Donetsk, so that'll probably be enough and we'll just call it a day there. Given the phone call that Trump had, where surely President Putin laid out in detail what he would not accept, why then do you suppose he thinks, apparently, Trump, that this will work here and we can just call the war a day?
First, he also called, which hasn't been reported. It was reported in the Russian media. He called Putin on October 7th. He wished him a happy birthday, and the phone call lasted 40 minutes. And obviously, you do not express yourself in terms of, you know, wishing somebody birthday for 40 minutes. So something else was discussed there too, and which essentially resulted in the latest call, where there was also agreement on meeting in Budapest. And Trump is doing political theater because he has no other option. There is no military option for NATO there. I mean, if it was to commit suicide. And as a result, Russians have been helping Trump since the very first day of his administration to kind of getting the off-ramp for the United States. Because United States and Russia, they have to live with each other. Many people still forget that Russia and the United States are literally neighbors. We're just, you know, what, close to each other, literally. We're touching each other. I mean, so. And it's a lot there, apart from the purely special military operation. There's a lot about Europe, and there's a lot about interference of Europeans, especially British, who for some reason think that they're still great, which they are pathetically inept and laughable country, really, nowadays. And so there's a lot to be factored in, but Trump has to play his political theater because obviously Washington is ungovernable in many respects. And there are all kinds of lobbies, all kinds of the interest groups which pressing him. And of course, there's Europe, which is involved there big time, especially British. And so he has to say that, oh, yeah, you know, he wanted to crawl out. But he doesn't want, obviously, to crawl out as to humiliate the United States. But since the first day of his administration, his statements actually were embarrassing in the extreme, you know. So, but at this stage, what can the United States really do? Nothing. Well,
and so that's really the question is, let's presume that your interpretation there is right and it's just political theater, but it still has to have some sort of instinct, even from his side here, because if you know that Russia will only accept plan A and they absolutely will not accept plan B, and you're talking about plan B, which stop it here, so you know that can't succeed. Where does this go when it doesn't succeed?
Nowhere. That's the issue. What are the options? And the options are simple as that. I mean, just crawl out. Sit and relax. You can do nothing about it. But there is a school of thought in Russia, and I do not reject it outright. I say there is a kernel of truth in it, that actually Putin and Trump really are playing things. They do develop some kind of the game, because I wrote about it for years. In the end, since 2014, actually, that's what I wrote. I wrote that in the end, that issue will be how the United States will be allowed off this humiliating situation, and especially when you remember the Afghanistan and all that, you know. So Russians do not want to humiliate the United States. They do it by the virtue of what Russians do. But the point is, Trump obviously was indicating that in the end, there are some points of the cooperation between Russia and the United States. And again, I stress it in the larger scheme of things. Two superpowers, they move in a very different universe. They move on a very different planes. And so in this case, is Russia interested in the United States actually crawling out without lashing out and doing some stupid thing, which may escalate and lead to, God forbids, you know, nuclear exchange? Of course, there's no doubt about it. It's almost like similar to dealing with the how you put the restraining whatever short or whatever garment on asylum patient. Because what we observe in the last, especially from the start of special military operation, American behavior and American position was anything but normal, anything but rational. And so you have to approach it from this way. And if need be, you can give some kind of the political loan, political capital, because you don't want also Trump and later Vance not to have chance against people who are, for example, Democrats, the Democratic National Committee, which is nothing more than essentially the organized crime group. They hate Russians, I mean, outright. They just abhor them. And considering their professional level, or rather lack thereof, we were on the verge of really going to the big time World War III with Biden administration. These are the same people who may come in, and we know why they hate Russians. There is a very clear case. There are people from their, you know, deviant communities. They abhor Russians. They hate them on the racial, cultural, and other levels, and they are not in complete control of their impulses. And I can remind you about Obama and Sochi Olympic Games, how those people viewed all that. That's when everybody, it's a whole other story. It's cultural, it's racial, it's more than that. So, it's not only me, Scott Ritter, Larry Johnson, we've been talking about during Biden administration, you have these three morons, Sullivan, Blinken, and Biden's wife, PhD in whatever, pedagogics or what have you. These people decided that for some reason they are qualified to handle the international relations between two nuclear superpowers. They don't even understand what kind of responsibility, what kind of the interaction is supposed to be there. Blinken was a lawyer, for crying out loud. You know, Sullivan, the guy with degree in political science, which is not science, these are the type of people who sit there and they think that they know how to handle situation. At least, as you correctly stated, Trump did have instinct. Now it's important to turn this instinct, which he obviously does have, but it's now important to turn this instinct into some kind of the coherent policy. Because in the end, and everybody knows this too, for Trump, being, well, some kind of the first approximation of the American nationalists. He obviously doesn't want the United States to lose, which United States already happened. It's already lost. It's just a matter of how you arrange it. That's the important part. And Russians know that in the end, groups in Washington, D.C., especially those people who fall all over the place, like Mitch McConnell or, you know, other people from Congress who are geriatric, basically collection of the corrupt people, they do not understand actually what is happening. And who knows what kind of the pressures they may apply to future administration if, God forbids, they will decide that they want United States to come up out the winner, you know, while obviously not understanding what is happening in the United States internally and how dramatic decline, economic and military, did happen over the last 30 years, of which I warned nonstop. It's the second decade I'm saying, guys, look at the real picture. And essentially, what is happening now, Putin gives Trump a game of ramp. How they will play it, in the end, it's the classic case of this proverbial toad sitting in the kettle with water, which is on the... And it's like, okay, it was before this. Now Trump says that, you know what, let them deal with this, you know.
So let me ask you a question here. Getting back into the analysis, you've been obviously, as you just said, tracking this for decades. You certainly know the rational position on the Russian Federation side and the sometimes radically irrational view on our side. And Trump has good instincts. That's certainly what I've said many times. But of late, here's a different theory. I'm not an expert. I'm not a psychological expert, but I'm just an analyst, and I'm looking at available information.
I wonder if
there's an additional problem in that. What if Trump is not entirely in charge of his mental faculties? For example, and here's there's one of two possibilities. One, there's a problem with his mental faculties. Number two, this is some sort of game that he's playing, a dangerous game, but it's intentional. I'd like your view on it. Here's the two views. One, let's go back to, I think it was maybe 3 weeks ago, where Trump out of nowhere signs his Trump Truth Social and says, you know what? I now have discovered Ukraine can go ahead and win its territory all the way back to the 1991 borders, may even go further than that. Then subsequent to that, he says, you know what? And this was a week ago Sunday. You know what? I think that, If Putin doesn't agree to the terms that I want on the end of this war, I'm going to give tomahawks. I might do that because those are a real offensive strategic capability. Then he has a phone call with Putin on Wednesday, and now all of a sudden, tomahawks are out the window. In fact, even later that same day, he's like saying, oh, well, we're not going to give our tomahawks away. And of course, I'm thinking, what? Wait, why did you so boisterously say it here and then days later say what is true? We don't have them to give away. Why would we do that? And then now that, according to the Washington Post, Putin phone call with Trump was along when they were talking about things about the end of the war, and Trump Putin was apparently lecturing Trump on history lessons and all this kind of stuff. And then the next day when he talks to Zelensky, we saw what happened in public, but apparently behind the scenes, according to media reports, there was another explosion between Trump and Zelensky, and a lot of shouting, much like what happened in February. Zelensky goes out not to the cameras and podiums that were set up for a post-conference press conference. Instead, he goes out in front of the White House where he's talking on the other side of the fence. I mean, the imagery couldn't have been worse. And now then here's Trump just saying, you know what, just stop it right here. Is this an elaborate game where he's playing 4D chess, or is there something else? What do you think?
I don't think Trump is capable of playing 4D chess. Putin plays it for him. But we know with absolute certainty that he is a very gullible man. He is interested only in some sort of winning, you know. Doesn't, as long as it projects his image as some kind of the important person. Oh, obviously, he's important by default, being the president of the United States. But obviously, he lacks the pure statesmanship qualities. And as our friend Larry Johnson also spoke about it, and people who actually met Trump, and they are Larry's friends, you know, that the guy is extremely insecure in private. He just, as any narcissist will do, he is longing for the affirmation of how great he is. That makes him extremely vulnerable for the flattery. And that's what, by the way, Europeans were doing. And they know how to manipulate him, at least to a certain degree. And so there are even caricatures, political caricatures about, even from Washington Post, where Zelensky drags the golden statue of Trump with all kinds of the laurels and what have you, and iteration of the all kinds of the, you know, the liberty and all stuff like that, you know. So, what I want to say is there is this complex game, and yeah, I am the psychologist, but we certainly know the some traits of Trump, which play and being played by all kinds of sides and parties which are interested in continuation of the war, and especially when you consider the fact that right now you have Europe headed by United Kingdom, which for some reason wants to pretend that they really are great power, which they are not, and they apply these pressures on Trump. Do they manipulate him? Absolutely they do. Absolutely. And so considering the fact that Washington, D.C. is stuffed with all kinds of different interest groups, different lobbies, so Trump is constantly into this, basically, you know, the obstacle course of all kinds of the influences he has to contend with. And that's why his essentially erratic statements, it is the function of his personal qualities. And his main personal quality is narcissism. He wants to win whatever the victory he defines, you know. And obviously there are some people which come to him and say, hey, dude, it's over, you know, just that's it. There are certainly, we know that there is, and again, the remnants of the competent officers in Pentagon, they probably do get this message through. I'm not sure about the CIA, but some people in Pentagon knows that it's over, I mean, like over. But he constantly talks about, remember, this is the very important thing. He constantly talks and he constantly defers to their situation in Afghanistan and how the U.S. Was leaving Afghanistan. He constantly talks about that, which it was essentially, you know, humiliation and things like that, which happened, you know, and that is why nobody takes us seriously. He obviously represents this in the black and white, not understanding what was happening, you know, essentially in terms of Afghanistan situation since 2006, let's put it this way. And this factor And this, if you wish, this is a burden for him. That is why he defers constantly.
Okay, so now I want to jump on that, because that plays into my opening theory or my investigative theory about whether there's something cognitively wrong with the president. Because let's go back to that 2020 deal that Trump brokered with the Taliban. I would argue, and did at the time, that's exactly what we needed to do. Just get us out of there. They had everything set up. And if Doug McGregor was in the administration toward the end of this period, and there was an actionable plan to get completely out of Afghanistan in order that would have left a government in place. And then the Biden administration jacked it up, and we can talk about that another time. But the Trump plan was very rational and helped America's interests if it had been executed on time. But now then, let's jump forward to right now with what he just said there last night on Air Force One, like, okay, well, let's just stop it on the line of contact. That can't happen, and it's not going to happen. So how does he extract even a fig leaf of a win after this to meet his needs?
That's where Putin comes in. That's where rational and polite, albeit very firm, Putin comes in. Putin is not interested in humiliating Trump. He can, but he doesn't. He is not interested. Russia is not interested in destroying the United States, or, you know, everybody understands the consequences of that. And, you know, this is not like destroying France. This is United States. OK, this is, just still military and however declining military and economic powerhouse. So you need to play this. You need to play this game, because, as I already stated, God forbid these two do not sort things out. The human civilization will end. That's simple as that. These are two only, not even China. China is not even the same league. And so these are the two entities in the human civilization on the globe which can obliterate it 11 times over. One will be enough, but 11 times over. They can wipe out the whole civilization. So this is a completely different issue of the responsibility. Does Trump have instinct on that? Probably somewhat. But obviously, the other thing which drives him, and that's why we talk about that, the plan of quitting Afghanistan was sound until we happened what happened. But the question is that this weighs on him very heavily, because he's afraid of humiliation. He's really afraid of humiliation, especially considering the fact that his political capital is dwindling. He talks a lot, and he probably feels also insecurity now in the outward, the political sense, not only when he talks to somebody privately, you know, and we know that he's just longing for affirmation of his greatest qualities and that he's a great guy while being insecure, which is obviously two sides of the same coin. When we talk about narcissists, possibly some of his mental faculties are giving up, but compared to Biden, obviously he's, you know, looks like a young man, energetic and all that, you know. So, but point is, he is afraid of this humiliation. And this is, to a certain degree, one of the most important factors in his activity and what he says and how he tries to rationalize this, because he constantly talks about the debacle in Afghanistan. And so that is the factor. We cannot discount it. It's there. You know?
So now let me throw another factor in that's going to complicate this region and may complicate Putin's ability to ride this out in some sort of a place that doesn't leave Trump humiliated. And that, of course, is the Zelensky factor. Now, showed you there at the top of the show this one small piece of a soundbite where Zelensky said, we're not losing and Russia isn't winning. That was part of a larger one that has more implications. Here's the full clip.
We are not losing this war, and Putin is not winning. And really, his army now in the weak position, I think so, because they really, from the beginning of this war, they could occupy 1% of our land, but they spend 1,300,000 people. I think this is high price, yes, for such for such length, and I don't understand why the leader of the country, which is the biggest, which has the biggest territory in the world, they need some more kilometers. That's why I think that this war is not about the land and not about territories for him. It's about our sovereignty and about our independence.
So apparently Russia's not even interested in, you know, any of their personnel and the people in Ukraine. It's just harming Zelensky. Apparently that's what it's all about. What do you say to that?
Well, it's like commenting on the, psychobabble by asylum patient, which he is actually. And again, he probably understands that he is a dead man walking because he will be offed most likely. No amount of the plastic surgery going to save him from whoever will get to him first. I mean, it could be NATO itself, especially SAS and MI6, which guard him, maybe CIA, because nobody wants this guy to fall in the hands of Russians because he will be singing after that. And oh boy, there will be very interesting things happening. So he is, you know, he's a huge liability. So he will be off if he doesn't understand it. But he is constantly under the influence of some kind of the substances. And they found each other, you know, a Western propaganda machine, legacy media, and him. And because they are always were in the business of BS, and considering their utter military lack of professionalism or among the journal class, so there you go. They just sit there and invent things, you know, throw the numbers, you know, they take, pardon my French, out of the ass and, you know, throw at people. And you cannot fix that because it is all the same old propaganda. It has its roots in the Cold War. And fact is, it has its roots in the World War II. And much of it is now so discredited that, I mean, only complete morons, I mean, believe that anymore. And people of, like, you know, boomer generation who trust legacy media, and, you know, I don't know, you know, it's just difficult to even comment on that, especially considering when you look at the facts on the ground and you look at the dynamics of what Russians do and what they continue to do. It's like, okay, sure. Yeah, it's not about sovereignty of his regime, that's for sure. And this regime will die.
Go on that, talking about the what he has agreed to, what he won't agree to. Zelensky has said, and I won't go into it right here, but he said that the front, by the way, is stabilized. And he specifically mentioned Kupiansk and Pokrovsk. More on that in a minute. But that's just his entry point. In that same interview with Kristen Welker, they said, going back to Trump's comment there about, we'll just end it at the current line of contact, they said, well, then, would you give up territory?
Are you now willing to negotiate some territory, to give up some of Ukraine's territory in order to end this war, Mr. President?
I understand the signal and message from President. A public message, yes. He published after our meeting, yes, as I understand.
Mm-hmm. After your meeting.
So I understand that we have to finish this war and begin this finishing from the place where soldiers stay, from the contact line, as I understood correctly. Yes, I agree that if we want to stop this war and to go to peace negotiations, to urgently and in diplomatic way, we need to stay where we stay, not to give something additional to Putin because he wants.
Not to just give it because that's just what Putin wants, and so we're just not going to. Even though we don't have the weapons, we don't have the ammunition, and the front is not exactly stabilized, as he claimed.
No, it's not at all.
Where does this go?
Oh no, it's just typical BS. And yeah, one of the main weapons in Ukraine's in his regime, which is destined to not only fall. It's a Nazi regime. It's controlled by Nazis. It's controlled by British and by United States. It was always for him play. Don't forget, he is the actor. He knows how to play with his member, the piano, and things of this nature. So he understood very much that the role of the media, legacy media in the United States and in the West. And so he supplies them with this BS and they gladly, you know, what propagate, you know, and disseminate it. And as a result, he fooled they fooled essentially, as they always do, actually, the Western public. Until, of course, Western public, especially in Europe, started to face the reality of what this special military operation is. And obviously, they have some issues with even so-called Ukrainian refugees. For example, Germany is not going to pay them. Poland wants to return all of them. And so things of this nature, you know, which are very unpleasant for his regime. But it's not about just sovereignty. It's about, obviously, killing off his regime. And it is being dismantled as we speak. And Mr. Medvedev actually doesn't mince words about that. He is openly stated many times, the Kyiv regime will be annihilated. In other matter, that you can annihilate it, of course, within 48 hours by turning Kyiv into the parking lot, which Russians do not want to do. So it's going to happen this way as it proceeds. And when we look attentively at the strategic objective, military political objective, political objectives on the grand scale, which is called grand strategy of the state, of which military strategy is merely one of the major tools, the situation is very simple. If you look attentively at what is happening to Ukrainian industry, it is being wiped out. Just yesterday, one of the critical mines in the Dnipropetrovsk area, Chernovskaya, you can see yourself, it's gone. It's not there. And there are the issue, you know, that continues. Ukraine will have only enough industry and only enough power plant, power generating capability, which is enough for the agrarian country. It will not be allowed anymore to have any serious army. It will not be in NATO. Otherwise, it will completely just disintegrate completely. It will be disintegrated. So for now, Russians playing this game. Okay, here is our four oblasts are coming back. Here are the political conditions of the settlement or the left, whatever is left in Ukraine. It is all happening without Zelensky regime. Whatever Ukrainians will decide that, but we are looking at a serious issue, which is not for faint of hearted. When we talk about what happened to Ukrainian nation, whatever is left of it, it is mentally damaged people nation. Because obviously, when you look attentively, how they have been brainwashed into believing that for some reason that the West will come and fight for them, they did come, but they didn't understand at that time. Now they clearly understand that they are merely expendables, they are cannon fodder, and we have 2 million of them now dead. We are talking about multiplied by two. We probably have another 4 million of maimed PTSD and people who cannot be normal, you know, members of the society. So what are you going to do with this? Russians do not want to control them. What they want some kind of territory, which if they want to go to EU, you know what, Godspeed. But it will be EU which will be paying for restoration or whatever the basic needs for the sustainment of the whatever is left in Ukrainian nation. But for territory, we're not even talking about Crimea, it's just out of the question. But I mean, we're talking about Lugansk, Donetsk, Zaporozhye, and Kherson. And by the way, there are all major movements now towards Kherson. And the operation for the liberation of Kherson has started. So it's out of the question. It's not negotiable. After that, as we already, if you look attentively at the map of, let's say, Sumy Oblast, Sumy region, you already can see this deep, you know, 20 kilometer deep zone controlled by Russian army, which obviously they will expand if need be, if they will continue to try to launch something at the Russian territory. We're looking, again, as I already stated, 20 kilometers deep into Dnipropetrovsk area, and of course we have Zaporozhye. And so now the whole thing is beginning to kind of, you know, form itself, if you wish, both on maps, on the operational strategic level, but we still have to remember what Kremlin is facing in terms of the post-SMO situation. And let me tell you, anybody who has any clue about what is happening with the filtration of Ukrainians, that Russians now saying we were stupid when we talked about them as brotherly people, because basically what Russia did at the start of their special military operation, they allowed them to go into Russia. With that came, obviously, sleeper cells of the terrorists and all kinds of the intel people, which now FSB is having hands full. Obviously, a bunch of those cells are controlled by CIA and especially MI6. So, and that the cleanup will continue. So we're looking at a larger picture, the political level, so that you have to somehow deal with this basically ungovernable territory. And that's the whole other, you know, can of worms. And this is obviously very high political level where Kremlin, people of the Russia Security Council, Mr. Putin, Mr. Medvedev, Mr. Gerasimov, Mr. Lavrov have to figure this out. They have to sort it out because nobody wants to have this festering, you know, wound next to Russia. But in the same time, you have to somehow pacify it to such a degree that it fits the criteria for Russia security. And criteria for Russia security is very simple. And that will be, it was repeated to Trump. It is being basically stated many times by top Russian officials, ranging from Putin himself to Lavrov to Rybkov to what have you, that in the end, no NATO, completely demilitarized, the Nazis will be hunted down. Some of them will be, of course, imprisoned. Others will be killed. And after that, if you want to remain Ukraine, what have you, be my guest, no army. Before that, in Istanbul, there was the talk about, oh, yeah, we will allow for you to keep 70,000 armed forces. I doubt it. It's going to be the case now.
I'll tell you who seems to have a different view than that, and you mentioned Sergei Lavrov. Well, his counterpart in the European Union, Kaya Kallas, has a different viewpoint.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We all support President Trump's efforts to end the war, but Putin will only negotiate seriously if he thinks he's losing. This week, we aim to adopt a major new sanctions package on Russia. Every euro we deny Russia is one that it can't use on war.
So here's the thing. So we have abysmally failed as the West writ large to do anything for Russia. And as she says, this is about to be the 19th package. The 18 packages that came before, if you're looking at it on balance, any rational thinking person would show that it harmed the West far more than whatever it harmed Russia. And it actually set the stage for Russia to move more permanently in directions opposite the West that we now have less leverage. We're going to try one more time. And she says this claim that the only language Russia understands is pressure. And this time, Andre, this time it's going to work. What say you?
Oh, yeah. I have photos of her press, precisely this press conference. There were three people in the auditorium. Three. I'm not exaggerating or embellishing or whatever. Three. So evidently, even the Western media have no interest in listening to, you know, psychobabble, you know. So, but yeah, and listen, nothing wrong against, nothing, you know, personal against Estonians, but Estonians are the butt of the anecdotes in Russia, and it is all connected with the slow thinking. You know, no, I mean, literally, you will go to the Russian folklore. On the Estonians themselves love to laugh about themselves as slow learners and slow reaction time people, you know. And she is a living proof of that. She is basically, oh my God, she's literally from the anecdote, you know. They still probably think that USSR exists somewhere, you know. And yeah. So, but I don't know. It's just asylum, complete asylum. That's who they are. I mean, you have to understand, and I've been, larger scheme of things. We have this whole generation of morons with PhDs, so as H.L. Mencken beautifully noted, who came to power. They have PhDs in all kinds of crap from sociology to literature and political science. And they ran Europe into the ground because they are morons. I can give you an example now that yesterday the former commander of the UK army, Sir Lord, what have you, oh my God, you know, Field Marshal, no less, Richards said that yeah, Ukraine is lost. But if NATO would have come to help it, you cannot fix them, period. It's, I don't know, it's intellectual. It's maybe even genetic. They do not understand things. Some of them do, and they are panicking. But the rest of it, you look at Kaya Kallas, she's obviously a clown. She was she's used as the puppet, you know, and she articulates things that even those morons in European Union and European Commission actually were telling her to shut up, essentially. You know, it happened, I believe, like a couple of months ago when she started to bloviate on the issues of geopolitics, and they had to correct her openly, publicly. So even there in European Commission, they know that she's moron, basically, and she is. I mean, and when moron recognizes in you that you are moron, that means you are really moron squared, you know? So, and it's just, I don't know how to even.
Right. So the question is going to be then, to what impact, if any, will this have on the Russian side? And I want to ask your assessment on something right here. We had Gilbert Doctorow on recently.
Oh, good
and
Lord.
He said that one of the things that he claimed that gives him an insight into what the Russians think is by watching the Russian media, which apparently he does a lot. And a lot of people will just dismiss that and say, well, it's just media controlled by the Russian government, so you can't listen to it. But he claims, no, you can actually tell a lot if you know what you're listening to. And I wonder, to what extent then do you think that the Russian newspapers, which seem to be more in line with what you're saying here, said overnight about this whole situation with Trump and what he said?
Back with the Russian papers, which this morning devote plenty of column space to the Trump-Putin meeting in Budapest that could happen soon. Whether or not it does, the pro-Kremlin press is clearly delighted by the prospect of another high-profile US-Russia summit, this time in Europe, but without the EU at the table. A military commentator in Komsomolskaya Pravda writes, "We look forward to the summit in Budapest, but have no illusions. Personally, I see no grounds for a ceasefire, but seeing what's happening around Pokrovsk, Kostyantynivka and Kupiansk, I have cautious optimism that Russia's negotiating position will be strengthened."
That almost seems really tame from the Russian side. They have cautious optimism that Russia's negotiating position. How do you assess that?
Well, I assess journalism as such. It's not a craft. It's not a profession. People who have no background in anything, they go into journalism. They are, listen, and I want to stress, obviously, Hunter Thompson in his Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas gave outstanding definition of media, of press, but it's so profane that I'm not going to be articulating it here. People who want to see what press is, go to, obviously, Hunter Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and read about it. I use this quote all the time. Russian journalists, they're not much different from American journalists. Mm. You know, they're media whores, most of them. Some of them are not, obviously. And I'm not talking about the core of a real professional military correspondents, which die on the front lines. And, you know, some of them are cadre officers. That is a completely different story. But no, for the most part, those people are media whores. They need story. And so they bloviate. And keep in mind, I know a number of media people there, including, for example, my good friend and acquaintance, Irina Alksnis, who is the chief editor of she runs RIA News and things like that. We did a number of the shows with her. So you cannot make any conclusion from Russian TV talk shows or press, with the exception of very few, you know, are reliable sources. But we live in the time of a complete death of the legacy media, not only in United States, which already happened. They have discredited bunch of the prostitutes. But in Russia, it's the same. So what they do, they need to bloviate, they need to elaborate, they need to, you know, perch this hot air, while reality, political reality, which is happening, obviously, not in media sphere, it's happening on the political and military levels. They don't have access to that, except for the rumors and whatever Mr. Peskov gives them to talk about or whatever Mr. Trump talks about. And most of the time, 90% of the time, they cannot even make proper conclusions. That is why they are also laughing stock, both TVs, shows. When you look at their so-called experts, it's really, it's horrible, honestly. So in this respect, Russian legacy media are not much different from American ones.
Fascinating. Well, in the atmosphere of getting to actually what the truth is, and as we always talk about on this channel, everything, no matter what anyone says anywhere, it always gets back to what's true on the ground. And so absolutely. Since we've mentioned several times about how Zelensky says the front is stabilized, et cetera, let's take a look at a little bit of that. You mentioned something about the Kherson area. And there was some news just out this morning that I was able to find here that says that the Russians have actually crossed the Dnipro River in a couple of spots down here, which could indicate some even bigger operations to the north. What do you know about that?
No, I mean, they went into this... island, then they crossed. Russian diversionary recon groups, DRGs, are operating for a long time now on the other side. The governor of the Kherson Oblast, I don't remember his name from the top of my head, he stated a couple days ago that operation of the liberation of Kherson has started. Of course, there is a probing operation, which is totally normal. You know, they get the group in, see whatever we can do, go out, and but yeah, it's Kherson is kind of coming back. The Russians will liberate it, so it's all about and yeah, I know it sounds horrible, it sounds absolutely horrible, but it is all about physical annihilation of the Ukrainian army and whatever the NATO volunteers, quote unquote, are there. So Russians are not in rush. It is all, it always was from the start of the special military operation when Putin told Gerasimov, we untether you, you are not tied to calendar. Because obviously Russian political top and obviously Gerasimov is part of it, but from the military side, they and the Minister of Defense, they know what is at stake and how it has to be prosecuted. And so in this case, no rush. You just continue to do that, and the more it happens, it is all about NATO. It's not about Ukraine. It hasn't been since pretty much 2023. It is all about NATO. It is a complete demilitarization of the NATO debt, and then see what's going to happen. And here comes this other thing, and it suddenly it has this very unique boost. And I spoke about it in my video yesterday, not yesterday, 2 days ago. About this funny idea of Alaska-Chukotka Russian-American tunnel under the Bering Strait, suddenly, why Europeans reacted this so, you know, hysterically on that? Because they know in this case they will be completely cut off. Yeah, it's a major project, but they understand. That brings us back to fact which Russians understood clearly. And this is now the cultural reality of the overwhelming majority of Russians. Russians as a nation overwhelmingly understand that Europe and most Europeans are existential enemies of Russian people. Period. That's the thing. That's what happened. This is this tectonic shift, which, well, suddenly was tectonic, and then snapped as the earthquake in the last 3 years. Russians now know that UK is the enemy, existential enemy. Existential enemy, Italians enemies. You know, when you look attentively, and in this case, it's not just about political top, which before that it was this distinction. Oh yeah, you know, political top and media are one thing, but people of Germany or people of England, which by the way may be actually true, are not against Russia. No, they are. So, and that's the thing, which is like, if you look attentively at the history in the record between Europeans and Russia. Russia was invaded constantly. The only thing which Russians do is, you know what, they beat off invasion, they go back to, in 18th century, they took Berlin. In 19th century, they took Paris after Napoleon invasion. Then Hitler, Berlin again, you know. So, and this happens all the time. So Russians had it with Europeans, you know. And that's the issue which has to be strongly considered. And that is why this idea, for example, of the tunnel, elicited this hysterical reaction on part of Europeans. They know what it means. That means that Russians are not interested. And yeah, what can you do? There is now the FSB warned about the MI6 and trying to sabotage the TurkStream. Hey, you know what? It's European affairs. Let them go. And if they have lines to the soup kitchens, it's their problem. You know, so Russians do not want to deal with this anymore.
All right. Well, let's continue on the front line here, because there's two other areas that I at least want to speak on here. And one is Pokrovsk. And that's the one we've been talking about for a long time. But we can see there has been significant advancements on a number of fronts here. Virtually the entirety of the West is now completely sealed off. And now Russia is going deeper into the heart of the city. And now even beyond that, to the extent that it may not be much longer, possibly even within the next month or two, where the whole city could fall, which then it gets into this whole agglomeration with Minograd and this pocket down here. If this here falls, I mean, almost the Ukrainian entire military in this area is going to be faced with either potentially getting cut off and then systematically destroyed, or they're going to have to withdraw. This could be a huge pocket and a success by the Russians before the end of the year. How do you assess it?
No, it's correct. Russians operate beyond the center of Pokrovsk. There are now documented videos which are seeing the surrender of the Ukrainian troops already in the center and beyond in Pokrovsk. So it's always was about cauldrons. It's a classic, you know, surrounding, enveloping, and leaving a couple of roads, or maybe one road for them to escape. It's their basically truism of the operational art, that you do not want to seal the thing off completely. Because in that case, it may increase the intensity of the resistance. So you have to envelop it and leave a little bit of the opening when they begin to run. Mm-hmm. It happened so many times before, except for obviously Mariupol, when they were just pummeled into utter submission. So and it will happen this time again in Konstantinovka. That will be also the same thing. You know, Kupiansk, they are already pretty much basically compressed in Kupiansk, for example, into the southern part of the city, agglomeration, if you wish. And in overall, it's clear that whatever is happening here, it is all about Kramatorsk-Slavyansk agglomeration. And after that, pretty much that's it. You know, the remnants of the Donetsk Oblast will be liberated. And then on whatever is happening, you can see yourself. And do not forget that it is actually probably the lag of about 3 to 4 days, you know, with the situation, because obviously we do not know the current real-time development. But the news which come from there, they are packed now into the southern part of the city and being annihilated as we speak. Obviously, some of them begin to surrender, others begin to run away. And that's what Russians want to do. They do not want to spend any unnecessary life of the Russian servicemen just because, you know, to accelerate things. Can Russians accelerate it? Yes, they can. Will they? No. Why spend your personnel and equipment for, you know, what relatively insignificant acceleration in terms of the liberation of those territories.
What do you make, by the way, of these? Because here there's been some additional areas here in the Kharkiv area, in this location here, as well as even it seems to be renewed move in Volchansk in this area up at the top here. Why is there new movement by the Russian side in these areas?
It's all about what has been stated from the get-go, that in the end, Russia will have to have cordon sanitaire, that means the security zone, which will be deep enough not to allow the use of the most of the tactical weapons, such as MLRS, the type of the, you know, HIMARS, or, well, if you look at the TACAMS, which United States pretty much ran out of it. I mean, they cannot supply, well, not run out of it, but they don't have any more to give. And that's depending on the access, so to speak. It will be about the having security zone, which will prevent the, reaching by that type of the weapons of the Russian territory. It doesn't mean that Russians will necessarily carve them out and join them, you know, as the Russian territory. It does not look like this now, at least. But who knows? As Vladimir Putin himself was ambiguous. You see, not only Trump can be ambiguous. Vladimir Putin can be also, when he was asked a couple of months ago about Sumy, will you take Sumy? He said, maybe, maybe not. That was his answer. So yeah, Russians are not opening their cards. They're doing things we just can only look and extrapolate, you know, at what is happening on the battlefield. So will they take Sumy? I think they will. But again, Russians will not waste a single life of the Russian military personnel when things could be solved by merely applying appropriate pressure and solving them politically.
And let me ask you a final question here. Let's look at that's been the, kind of an update on the ground. Final update in the air, which has a component actually of the defense industrial base, because there have been numerous reports over the last month or so that by the end of this year, Russia will be up to somewhere around and possibly even beyond 1,000 Garand-2 drones created or built per day, average in there. And we've seen a few times where they've reached up to 700-800 drones and missiles that were fired. But oftentimes there's a couple of days, there's none. A couple of days, there's like 200, I think like the day before, 300, et cetera. Well, that would imply that Russia is somewhere building up a huge stockpile of them. So two questions we'll look, first of all, is what is the state of Russia's air war against Ukraine to try and knock out energy facilities, the transportation facilities? Been a lot of strikes on trains lately. So let's start with that one first.
The latest data, which goes in terms of the production of the standoff weapons, such as not geranium. Geraniums, you are absolutely correct, probably already within 1,000 a day. And, you know, just it's just normal routine work of Russian military industrial complex. But there is a very interesting thing about the standoff weapons, such as cruise missiles, or such as ballistic missiles for much longer range, such as Tornado, for example, which are guided missiles. They are not just ballistic missiles. And when I talk about Iskanders, we talk about Zircons, we talk about Kinjals, we talk about all of it. And obviously, a 3M14 caliber and X-101, KH-101, 26,000 evidently has been produced in the last 3.5 years. This is insane number. And some of them, of course, do not fly. They are being stored. They are being, you know, but 26,000. This is just, yeah, it's insane. And yeah, Russia is building up arsenals, but it was already stated by very many people, Medvedev and all others, that, yeah, even it is when it's over in terms of special military operation, Russia will continue to increase arsenals just in case. You know, who knows? There are many people who are stupid still in Europe. Russians are not interested to, you know, invading Europe. But if Europe ever, which I doubt it will, but if it somehow recovers and decides to, you know, do another Drang nach Osten, you know, as the Germans love to, you know, Wehrmacht did, they will be annihilated. Even the assembly areas without any trouble, you know. So that's what is happening. So the production is ramping up on some critical standoff weaponry, and it probably will continue to grow, but not all of them, of course, will be used on Ukraine. First, the Russians essentially are running out of targets by now. So, and but it will be stored. It will be the part of the arsenal. And there is no secret about it, because actually the combined West, and especially Europe, which is fanatical in its Russophobia, not Russophobia, yeah, both Russophobia and hatred of Russians, they have to know that they have more than enough, Russia has more than enough weapons to...
So on this near term here, I mean, just talk to us over, like, say, the next 6 weeks into the first part of December. How much more of this aerial attacks from Russia can we expect to even further diminish their ability to heat, to the thermal electric plants, et cetera, the trains that have been moving, because that seems to be a new, relatively new priority target for the Russian side. What is going to be the impact as they get into the really cold part of winter?
Oh, it's already huge. They even openly state that essentially now Ukraine doesn't have consistent, doesn't have permanent power supply. Simple as that. And it will increase. And don't forget, it's not just killing the power grid and the power electric power plant. Many people forget that Kinjals penetrated the storages of the gas in the Western Ukraine. And my God, they did. So it's just, so they, essentially Ukraine is being turned into the agrarian country and on the level of self-sustainment, just not going, you know, hungry. It's not going to have the advanced industry, which is largely have been destroyed. And it's not going to have the power plant, which is enough to support that kind of industry, which, of course, translates in the end into some kind of the production of the weapons. Just to give you an example, Russians haven't touched motor siege plant for years during SMO. And motor siege is the plant which it produces Ivchenko Progress engines, jet engines for such aircraft like AN-124 Ruslan and other types of their air and ground applications. Russians didn't touch it. Chinese wanted to buy it 5 years, 5 years ago. United States sabotaged it, which is understandable why. They didn't want, China has their hands on the fairly modern jet engine production. Well, guess what? Russians were not touching it for 3 years, and now they do. And now they don't care. They're just blowing this up to smithereens. That means what? Russians have no interest in Ukraine being a modern industrial state. And, well, it was disintegrating on its own completely, even before. But now it accelerated to the really radical annihilation of the Ukrainian industries. Simple as that.
So, final question. I always periodically toss it up to you. How much longer can the Ukrainian armed forces hold on before there's just an outright collapse somewhere on the front line? Can it go years?
No, not years. Months, you know. Yeah, they probably can do months, especially considering the fact how they are now continuing to kidnap people for support, essentially, their cannon fodder, you know. And, yeah, they might last months, but Russians are not in Russia. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Can Russia finish it off now? Yes. Will it increase casualties? Yes. So do Russians want to do it? No. Russia can continue to do it as long as necessary. You know, so, but yeah, and that's the whole thing. That's the truth which have been learned in a hard way by combined West. And now they see what real how real economy looks like. Not all kinds of those financial services, banking, and things which they consider to be tech industries like Amazon. Yeah, sure. You know, but this is the real economy, which produces goods and tangibles.
Well, listen, we really appreciate you coming on to give us an update on this stuff, especially on some of the tactical and the strategic views here. And just want to remind people that you don't have to wait until Andre comes on our show each week or every other week. You can go to Smoothie X12 and watch him online and or buy his books, because apparently those are some things that are have a lot of interesting things as well and still relevant in many cases. So thank you for coming on, Andre. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And we appreciate you guys, too. Also, to let you know, we will have Trina Parsi on later this afternoon talking about Iran's enriched uranium. Has it been unharmed? New information today says that perhaps, what a shock, maybe things weren't obliterated earlier this summer like we were led to believe. We'll be talking about all that with Trina later this afternoon. Be sure and look for the time on our channel, and we will see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.